My name is Virginia Nyberg, N-Y-B-E-R-G, and I'm interviewing Gladys Westrum, W-E-S-T-R-U-M, and we're going to be talking about the religious aspect of life in Moorhead. Gladys, what factor determined your religious affiliation?
My parents were of Swedish descent, and so naturally, when I was born, I became a member of the same church that they were of.
Now, your father was really very instrumental, wasn't he, in establishing the Bethesda Lutheran Church, which is the church you were a member of. Can you tell us a little bit about that, too?
All right. I belonged to the Bethesda then all the time, except while I was away teaching, and then when I was married. And so when I came back, I went to the same church. When I was born, the Christian membership of Bethesda was almost entirely Swedish. My grandparents were born in Sweden, both sets of them, and when they came to this country, they were instrumental in establishing the Bethesda Evangelical Lutheran Church in Moorhead. And that was in the spring of 1888, excuse me. In 1888, the mission board of our conference sent a man here to see if there was enough interest to establish a Swedish Lutheran church in the community. He found a great many workers in Moorhead because that was just when the railroad was going through. But the people didn't seem to be interested in any work in the church. So this man went back and reported to the conference that he found Scandinavians there, but he had advised them that they better seek work elsewhere, and hopes for a congregation were nil. But, however, there were four families and three single men who organized the church, and that was in 1880. At the first session was held in a, first sessions really were held in a school in Fargo because they couldn't find a vacant building in Moorhead. But later on, the school board, Moorhead School Board, had some land that they weren't going to use, and it was on 6th Street and 2nd Avenue, and they offered that to the church. And so the church bought it. They built a very nice structure for that time. The lower part was used for the parsonage. The family moved in there, and that was the parsonage. And the upper part was a spacious church auditorium with kerosene lamps that provided the light, and there was a long, oblong wood stove that kept it warm in the chill of winter. And this arrangement lasted for 25 years.
Oh, that's so interesting, Gladys. You, at that point, you could feel the ethnic ties were really strong. Is that correct?
Yes, I could.
The reason the ties were so strong that individual churches of the different nationalities were set up, and this was the Swedish.
That's right. The Swedish had, Swedes had their church, the Norwegian people had their church, and that's the way it went.
Mm-hmm. And you told us about the geography, the location, and so on and so forth.
I'd like to go a little farther into that.
That would be just fine.
As a youngster, I remember having to walk to church all the time, even though it was 10 or 12 blocks, because my parents didn't have a car. But I do also remember that my grandparents, who lived 10, 12 blocks farther north than us, had a buggy. And once in a while, they'd come by our house, and some of the littler ones of us could get a ride to church in the buggy. And in back of the church was a long stable for people who did come by buggy, because there were quite a few farmers that belonged to the church at that time. They'd come in their buggies, leave them outside, and stable their horses on the inside out of the cold weather in the winter.
What about the economics at that particular period when it started? It must have been hard.
Well, it was, but everybody was in the same boat. our church was a very friendly church, and they were concerned about each other. I can't remember that there was much change during the Depression part. Our church always met its synod obligations. In fact, that was, as still is, the first thing that was paid out of the money each month. Membership remains about the same, except for some who would move away, but then others would have children, and that kept it evenly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about the sociological factors? What about the ages of the people that are joining the church? Is it growing? Has it reached a standstill? And what about the rebellion in the 1960s? How did that affect Bethesda?
I really can't remember any real rebellion, but there was always young people active in the church. They were loyal to the church in their Sunday school teaching. And because of the location, there were many college students that attended, and they would have good times in the church basement at their youth meetings. And also there was parochial school, was held during the summer. And later on, they discontinued that because there was midweek instruction was given during the school months. These classes, they were called Thursday school. And that was the day that all the children from I don't remember exactly what age, were dismissed and could go to the church of their choice for 1 hour of religious instruction.
What changes have you experienced or noticed in the trends of the church from the time it was organized until the present day?
Well, first of all, in 1905, we had to build, enlarge our church. And a parsonage had been built 2 years before that. And then by 1926, the membership had grown to 348 people. And the property at that time was valued at approximately $35,000 with no indebtedness.
That was really pretty good.
Many changes have been noticed since the church first began. Probably the most noted change was the language. Up to the time of the war, Bethesda was mainly a Swedish-speaking congregation. English was not used much earlier, but it was used some, but not to a great extent. Now many of the younger members began to lose interest in the service, and naturally they would when it was in the Swedish. And as you know, at that time, parents didn't continue speaking Swedish to their children because their friends in that would probably ridicule them. So the Swedish language was not carried over too much which would be my parents. Mm-hmm. So they weren't interested in a mm-hmm. Swedish service.
Mm-hmm. Did you continue having a Swedish service, though,
yes.
Like once a month or twice a
yes.
month?
Yes, later on mm-hmm. we did. We had services once a month in the Swedish. At that time, though, while we were still having Swedish, confirmation instruction and Sunday school was held. But by the time they got a new pastor, they had all these services were conducted in the English language, except, as they say, once a month they would have a Swedish service. And our pastor at that time had a Swedish service over the radio. And that was a novelty. I mean, there weren't many services being broadcast at that time.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, too.
Oh, then the war came, and the general demand that English be the official language. So we had to do something about it. And people saw it, and they thought that now this was a good time to make the change, so that when the next pastor came, it was all changed over, and then it was English entirely.
What war now?
The war in Europe in 1934, was that?
The First World War?
Not the First World War.
Oh,
this was later.
The mm-hmm. Second mm-hmm. World War. Mm-hmm. I see. It carried mm-hmm. on that long.
It did. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. You've told a little bit about the education, the confirmation and the Thursday school, mm-hmm. which nowadays is called Wednesday school, isn't it?
I
it's changed
it
to Wednesday. Yes.
Wednesday is the day that they're supposed to not have any school activities that will interfere with the children.
All the church activities are supposed to be.
Uh-huh.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Well, do you have, Bethesda has also continuing education programs for the adults too,
yes,
don't they?
Yes, we do. I'll tell you about that
too. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, there seems to be more demand now, more participation, I should say, by the lay people in the church. Before, our pastor conducted the entire service. But now, they have lay readers that read the lessons for the day, and the pastor just has the gospel message. And also, children take more participation. There's more choirs. Before, we had a choir, probably a junior choir, but maybe not. But now, we have two or three younger choirs. And also, we also notice that there's instruments being brought into the church, accompanists and that, and it adds greatly to our service.
The music is trying to keep up with the times, in other words.
I think so, too.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But you haven't lost the good choral music,
no,
either.
No, we haven't. No, that's our choir furnishes
right.
us with that. Sometimes the children's choir isn't choral music,
no.
What I would call, but it's interesting.
It's
anyway.
What they like to
like.
Sing.
It's like, the liturgy has been changed twice in the last 20 years. And for many of the members, that isn't too easy, of the older members. But of course, there aren't too many of the older members now either. What was I going to say about that? There seems to be the liturgy. I was telling you about the liturgy. It's been changed twice. And as I said, it isn't too easy for some of the older members. But I think there's more freedom of style in the songs we sing now. We've crossed over denominational lines and choosing our hymns. Our church has changed its hymn book 3 times since its first organization. And the last time, you will know, was so that many of the Lutheran churches would have exactly the same hymn book. So that we went to another church, we didn't have to, it was easier to follow along with the liturgy and that. In our church, we alternate the each year of the setting that we used.
Well, now what about the education in the church?
Well, as I mentioned before, our church participated in Thursday school once a week. That was discontinued, for us at least, because our church was relocated out in the country. But now during the summer, there is vacation Bible school. It used to be for 2 weeks at a time, but now it's only for one. In fact, when I was in school in the first Bethesda church, we went 6 weeks in the summer, but then we called it sweet school. But there was, of course, English too, but we had our spelling and other things in Swedish.
Is that right?
This vacation Bible school, but then there is also a class of 3 and 4 year olds that meet on Wednesday out at the church. And when they get to be 5 year olds, then they're taken into the kindergarten class. Junior and senior high school students attend Luther League meetings once or twice each month. And the Junior League is for those who are not confirmed, and then the Senior League is for those who have already been confirmed. And the Senior League has a convention, not every year, but in some large city where they can go and they get acquainted with different Luther Leagues and also great speakers. And it's really a good thing for our children to see that what the other leagues are doing and to help them in their problems and
mm-hmm.
things.
Mm-hmm. Bethesda now is in a new church.
Yes.
Tell us about the physical plant changes that have taken place.
A new parish, first we had, before we moved out here, we had to have a new parish education building, and that was dedicated in 1954. This addition was necessary because of the growth in the families. And in the number and the change in the family. And Sunday mornings, we could have then an adult class, and it still meets before services, and its purpose is to educate our adults in social concerns of the community, theology of our church, and also state and world needs. Sometimes it's a speaker, sometimes it's lectures, slides, and films. Now I'll tell you about our relocation. After 95 years in the same location, the church was relocated outside the city limits. One reason for that was they thought the building after 50 years would need some extensive remodeling, beams and things like that. They thought maybe it wasn't safe. So that was one consideration. Another was we were a downtown church and parking had become extremely difficult. Three churches right on that avenue down the street on 7th, 6th, and 5th Street made it hard for people to find a place to park. So we thought that something needed to be done. So we did decide to move. But it's interesting, the vote to move out into the country, because that's where we were going, was a difficult one to make, especially those who had called Bethesda their home all their life. The present building is of contemporary design, and it's very modern looking. In addition to its primary function, which is worship, the sanctuary is so designed that the chancel area with ease converts into a stage for drama activity and theater, and it is used for that. What a difference it makes in our Christmas programs for the little ones. They just extend that stage and raised it a little bit, and no problem whatsoever now, no matter what kind of a play they try to put on. The new church, though, to me at least, had its drawbacks. It lacked the symbolism of the stained glass windows that we had been so accustomed to.
And which were very beautiful.
They were beautiful, and they couldn't be taken out.
No.
For many reasons. But anyway, in a contemporary church, you don't have those stained glass windows.
There's a little story about the church bell.
Yes. That church bell was originally put into the church, and when we went to move, we thought, can we leave the bell? But it was decided to take the bell along with us, but it first had to be sent way to the East Coast, I believe it was, and it cost a great deal of money. But the Swedes were so liked that bell so well that it was sent out there, retoned or whatever you call it that you do to a bell, and placed out on our new grounds. And we have it every single morning, calls us to worship.
Mm-hmm. Which is a bit of the old in with the new.
No, that's right. Mm-hmm. I remember, though, in the old church, the church bell always rang a half hour before services, and that was I think that was an original thing that they did. They rang the bell a half an hour so you remembered to start getting ready at least. But now we just ring it during for the service.
Mm-hmm. How do you find the organizational structure? Do you feel that has changed a great deal over the years?
Well, I don't think it, in its real sense, hasn't changed a lot. We have more organizational. I should say we have and we don't. We had two women's organizations in the old church, Women's Mission Society, and now with the new church that was formed with those three Lutheran churches some while back, there was to be only one women's organization. So we do have one women's organization, the Lutheran Church Women. And they meet each month as a group, but then we also have what we call units. And that's the Lutheran Church Women divided into groups, units, where we can meet mostly in the home. And that is when we have a Bible study, and it's not so formal. It's a little more like a social meeting. But we do have Bible study there. The men also have a meeting. There used to be a Lutheran Brotherhood, but that was discontinued. And now they have a meeting, at least at our church, and they meet monthly, and it's a supper meeting with sandwich and soup, and they do all the preparation themselves. The younger people have two organizations. One is called the Koinonia Club, and the other one is the Fellowship Club. Mm-hmm. Just slipped my mind. Mm-hmm. The Koinonia Club was established because they thought some of the younger married people in the church didn't care to belong to the Fellowship Club. It seemed like for an older group. So the Koinonia really is a younger group, and they don't limit their membership to couples. It's for singles, and they do a lot of fun things, but they also are concerned about the needs of the church, and they do have projects that they do. But I know one thing that the Koinonia Club does is first part of December, as a group, they take their families and go out and cut down their Christmas trees, make a picnic out of it.
Uh-huh.
And then the Fellowship Club is for the older couples, as I say, and theirs is a social meeting, but they also do things, take care of, have different projects that they work on.
Back in the early history of the church, was there a division in the church between the male and the female, like the male sat on one side and the female on the other?
I've heard of that. And I've been in churches years ago where it was, but I don't believe it ever was in our church, at least not that I knew of. I can't ever remember my parents saying that they even went on one side and the other. But I know it was very prevalent in my husband's church, a Norwegian church, and the men always sat on one side and the women. But not to my knowledge, but it could have been.
Mm-hmm.
Probably in the old country, but maybe when they carried it, came over here, they didn't carry it over.
Uh-huh. And then also, back in the early days of the church, and continuing on for many, many years, there was a strong ladies' aid. Do you want to tell about that and the dinners?
Yeah, the ladies' aid really were the backbone of the church. At least the ladies thought so, and I think they were, because they really supplied a lot of the money that was sent to missions and other things. And they got that money, not that they had much money themselves at that time to spend, at least the women didn't, but they provided church suppers. There was always one big church supper at least during the year, and the townspeople would come to it too. And then they would have oyster stews, at least in our church they did. And in the summer there was always an ice cream social, and they'd put lights out on the lawn, and if you could fight the mosquitoes, but they didn't seem to be as bad as they are now, but anyway. And much, much money was raised at that time through the ladies, the efforts of the ladies' aid. And you always knew who did the Lefsan, who did the Lutefisk, and because they were called by that name. They were the persons that were responsible.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
What about, we've heard so much about ecumenism now. Do you see any changes in the outlook as far as Bethesda Lutheran and the Swedish people are concerned?
All right. I think our church has seen a great change in our outlook toward ecumenism. We try to minister to all people, regardless of creed or color. Of course, we have always done that, but it seems that we have more of awareness of other people besides those. We've always had mission projects and that, but it was almost always to our own people. We even supported our own missionaries, which was natural, on the mission field. But now we have more of awareness of the needs of others, even though they aren't Lutherans and they're not even Swedes.
Mm-hmm. So, by others, you mean not only in the community, but worldwide?
Yes, worldwide. Mm-hmm. So that's what I was thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
All of our, and we notice that especially this year and last year in the hunger program. We have a hunger program going on in our church all the time. Right in our in the entrance there, we have shelves where the people are encouraged to bring food every Sunday if they want to, and the Sunday school is. And the shelves are filled, and somebody takes it every end of the week or two and brings it down to the food pantry. And that's one thing that we never did before, is we're so concerned about those of the hungry.
Excuse me, Gladys.
And then we have not only for our own food pantry, but look what we are doing for worldwide hunger.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Also, in the did you want me to go on and tell you
yes,
about more?
Yes.
In the distribution, distributing of the elements in our church has been changed greatly. Mm-hmm. Before, only the pastor gave communion. But now, lay people help with the distribution of the communion. And also, when we first started in our church, we all drank from one cup. But now we have individual glasses that we drink from. The pastor in the olden days would have a napkin and he'd wipe off the cup and then pass it to the next one. And then later on with the individual glasses. But now in our church we have what we call the intinction method. And so the pastor dips the wafer into the wine and gives it to us. But not only the pastor gives us communion, but we have at least two pastors and also some help sometime from lay persons. And also another thing about preparation for communion, I don't know if it's a good thing or not, but in the older church, we always had to speak to the pastor before communion.
To tell him if you were going to be taking it?
Yes, and that was after you got to church, you went up into his little room and told him, and you didn't go the day before that to tell him if you were taking it, and supposed to be to prepare yourself, I suppose, or to... Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And also I'd like to say that communion is starting earlier in the Lutheran Church now. Now the fifth graders are prepared for communion so that when they're confirmed, they have already had their first communion. They start at the fifth grade in our church, and then after they get into junior high, then they are starting their preparation for confirmation, and that's usually about 3 years. And then, and also during that time, other teachers help them. Maybe the first and second year of confirmation, they'll have a teacher. But always the pastor is the one who takes the last year of confirmation for them.
Mm-hmm. What about the attitude about attending other churches and events? Was that ever a problem in Bethesda?
Well, I don't know if it was a problem, but you never had any other pastors. You'd have a Lutheran pastor come into your church, but did you ever hear of a priest coming into a Lutheran church? Well, that all has been changed. And now other pastors are invited to our church, and our pastor goes to other churches and takes part, which I think is a very good thing. Mm-hmm. We get to know a lot more about the other services, the other churches, what their ideas are, or what a word I'm trying to say.
Yes, that's good.
Are, and become more social, more together.
Right.
Understand each other much better. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different understanding between people now than there was when we stuck to our own beliefs and that. We learn more, and the more you learn, the better you understand.
Right, that's right. Is there any cooperation? There is, isn't there, a great deal of cooperation in your church activities and the other activities that the community offers. Can you tell us something about that?
Well, I know one thing. What I was first going to say about the Lenten services in our church this year now, instead of the pastor conducting them, we have a group of people that belong to the church that are conducting the services, both the liturgy and the sermon that is given. And before, we have had other pastors come in for Lenten services, and it really makes a difference. You get a different slant on what Lent is all about.
And you've had drama.
Yes, we've had drama, uh-huh. I should say. Yes, what I was going to say now, we have Boy Scouts are invited to participate. I mean, they have their meetings held there, and it isn't only the Boy Scouts from our own church. In fact, I think at least 1 year we've had when there wasn't anyone from our own church. But they are given the use of the church, the facilities, and we are encouraged, our pastor encourages us to attend anything that they are putting on that we are invited to.
I would like to ask you about the church picnic. Way back in history, that must have been a time that was really an important social time in the life of the congregation.
That was very important, and it's one I won't ever forget, because as long as I can remember, my dad was ahead of the church picnic every year. And I think one reason for that was he worked in a grocery store, and he drove with horses and had a wagon, or in the winter had a sled. And so it was easy for him to bring the pop and the candy out to the grounds wherever we had it. Sometimes we didn't think it was far out, but now we would think it was kind of far out. One of our main places to meet was out by the railroad tracks, out where the swimming pool is now. Well, we walked out there. That wasn't anything then, but he would go out early and set it up. Another place we always met was right down where the Mord High Rise, not the one on 8th Street, but the
First Avenue North.
First Avenue North was, and there was a picnic grounds, and we met there all the time. I remember distinctly one time when we came home from our picnic, our cow had gotten tangled up in the rope and was laying there dead in the grass. It had choked itself, and I'll never forget that. But everybody came to the picnic, and you got one bottle of pop free and one ice cream cone free, but the rest you had to buy. But there wasn't much sale because children at that time didn't have. We continued this picnic idea, but of course we didn't go to those places. For one reason, those places weren't there. They were all populated. But our church still has a church picnic every summer. I just think last year was the first time that we changed the time of it. It used to be on a Sunday, but now it's on a weekday. And it coincides with the closing of church school, Vacation Bible School. But we have a committee, and they still bring the big coffee pots and have the ice cream and the pop, and it's a joyous occasion, and it's still well attended. I think that's one of the last things that'll go in the Bethesda Lutheran Church, is the church picnic.
And then I want to ask you about another event that is part, that's an important part of the Swedish heritage, and that is your Eucharistic services.
Oh yes, but those were continued. But that was something that even people who didn't belong to Bethesda Church and were Swedes came to the Eucharistic service, and that was at 5:30 Christmas morning, and that was before there were many cars or that, and everybody walked or else had horses. Although I do remember that the streetcar company in Fargo made it a rule on that Sunday morning they would run the streetcars, and one went north and one went south, one on the south side, because I remember sometimes we took the streetcar to go. That was a highlight. Okay, that was the highlight of the year, the Eucharistic service. And that Hosanna chorus that they sang can never be repeated unless you hear it in English and a choir singing it. And we never worried for a packed church because regardless of the weather, I don't believe ever a Eucharistic service was postponed. I know it wasn't.
Gladys, also, there's a tradition in the Swedish church, the St. Lucia Day. Can you tell us about that as far as Bethesda is concerned?
The Lucia Day service really isn't connected with Bethesda Lutheran Church as a whole, but a Swedish club had been organized here in Moorhead, and we commemorate St. Lucia Day out at our church. It's a day when, over in Sweden, the Lucia girl would bring coffee to the members that were still sleeping. And of course, we don't have it in the morning, so we can do that, but we do other things. And we have a fine program, and we always have a good group there that comes for the Lucia Fest.
And that's before Christmas.
Right before Christmas, mm-hmm, yes. Mm-hmm. We do have, did I mention about the, we have a bulletin? I think maybe I told you about that before, but anyway, what I wanted to say about the continuing service of our church at Bethesda. And my prayer is that it will always be a caring church and will be active in its outreach to the foreign mission as well as to here at home. And I pray that it will always have a stabilizing influence on our young people. May we help families that are in need and be supportive of their needs. Help our young people to be non-compromising in their convictions. And may God's word continue to be taught to all.
Well, Gladys, it's been so interesting visiting with you and hearing all this history about Bethesda. And one thing I think your interview has shown is that Bethesda is not just an isolated church, but it's grown and it's a vital part of our community. Thank you so much.
Thank you, too, for saying that.